This is the Partnership Playbook, a podcast helping sales and marketing leaders secure high-value partnerships that finally unlock business growth and reclaim time. I'm your coach, Phil Hayes-Sinclair. Welcome to the show. All right, so this has been a conversation long in the works. I would like to introduce you to my friend Kathleen, who has worn many hats in her life. And if there's one thing to take away from this episode, it is how you can move through life and make changes and create partnerships that really matter. So Kathleen, thank you for spending time with me today. I would love to start by introducing people to your backstory, which I think is nothing short of fascinating. So tell us about Kathleen's backstory.
Yeah, I think that's an important question. I'm super stoked to be here. I've been looking forward to it. Thank you for being so patient. My backstory is I didn't realize at a very young age, my parents, my friends, and a lot of people said, you're able to make dreams a reality and or like from scratch. And I didn't know what they meant. It wasn't clear. But now, 20 years later, I realize, oh, wow, like everything that I dreamed of, like two really like detailed version of what it happened in my life and how it showed up was a creation of my imagination. So I don't know if you would call it like, I'm able to make dreams a reality. I'm a dream maker. I'm a dream catcher, however you call it. But through the years, I realized that I've been able to do that, relocate from Montreal to Silicon Valley and then Silicon Beach, which is LA, and then work across sales, marketing, product, music industry and whatnot. Been an actress a long time ago as well. So I've been able to, and even like the man I married was on my vision board. And I don't know. And then there was a computer and there was one kid. I only have one kid. So you gotta be very careful about what you create and what you put in the universe, because that's what I've been able to accomplish in my life. So I think that's my backstory. So I believe that no dream is too small, and then you can make it happen if you really want to.
Let's talk about where you moved into professionally, into these very large companies. You're renowned as a revenue leader, as a sales leader, somebody who knows how to have conversations, build trust quickly, help people understand that your team can help them achieve great things. You transitioned from, you know, like you said, being an actress into these areas. And I remember you saying once that there was a really pivotal course or mentorship that you had that really unlocked for you the idea of being able to sell and being able to help people achieve their outcomes. Tell me a bit about that transition, because you have quite a reputation for being an outstanding sales leader. How did that transition happen for you?
So I think I really followed my obsessions. So I was, at the time when I became a salesperson, I was initially a product manager at Yahoo. And one of the sales AEs was very senior, was a director of sales, like, you should be in sales. First, you understand the product in and out. Secondly, you're personable and people like to see you. People like to have this. I was a geek. It was like this little geek explaining how everything worked in the back end and the front end. And then thirdly, it's like there's this energy about you that made that you should be in sales. So sales didn't happen at that moment. It happened like multiple years later, I think 5 years later. And I started my journey in sales at Google. And that's where I really was in the trenches of understanding how Google works, how Google sales work. And it was a boot camp. My first manager was a venture capital investor. He was working. He slept 3 hours a night. He would create a framework every week. It's like, this is how we're going to do it. Rocket stick growth. So it was really a boot camp in sales. And I'm very grateful for all the leaders that I've reported to, because I feel like I've learned from each single one of these leaders. So I learned velocity from one of my first manager. He was moved deals very quickly, had a very strong opinion about everything, but also intensity. He would go in, understand the business model, and then after that, meet the people and then figure out, we would debrief, figure out if they have an appetite to grow. And if they do, then it's like, okay, it would dispatch us, the team. And those are some of the principles that to this day, I still leverage as a sales leader.
Can we dive into some of those? Because I think they're really, really essential to what a lot of people miss when it comes to sales, right? This idea of urgency and intensity, I think a lot of people can interpret that as being, I'm going to be sold to. Like, I'm really going to, I'm going to have to say, whoa, hang on a second. I don't need all the things you're selling. But when you talk about intensity and the way to sell well, it's actually more about just understanding the needs, right? And being able to not let the momentum lapse so that people don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
Can you say a bit more about that?
Yeah, I can take a step back because, like, this is what he did, but there's like a science behind this.
Mm.
So I think there's a couple of sales principles that I carry to this day that help me understand if I have a book of business. If tomorrow I have to start somewhere, so I'm going to rely on 5 principles. The first one is, like, not all customers are made equal. What it means is that I really have to understand you can leverage the Pareto rule, which is the 80-20, figuring out which 20% of my customers are going to generate 80% of revenue. And that's number one. So understanding which ones have a higher propensity to grow in your segmentation of your time, your energy, etc. So business model, revenue generation. Secondly, you have to have a deep understanding of how they make money. So their business model, their customer business objectives, and what are their business goals? What are the golden OKRs or KPIs that they need to deliver on at the executive level and then trickle back down to the junior person level, such that you can understand where would you fit in this equation as a vendor, as a salesperson, but really understand, like, where do you add value? Because that's the crux of the partnership, is that you have to add a lot of value. And then the more value you add, the more it sticks. I think and that understanding, depending if you sell SaaS, maybe you might not be able to try it as well as if it's retail. If I am on a portfolio where I have, like, brands I can try, experiences I can try, I'm going to try to try them. I'm going to go experiences such that I can talk about it intelligently. Number 3 is you have to matter. And what I mean by that is that why would a C-level meet with you if you're not really impacting their bottom line? There's no magic number, but if it's not at least 10 to 30% of their bottom line, then you're, like, very low in the equation of value adds. So you have to matter. And sometimes it's not the bottom line. Sometimes when I was at LinkedIn, it was about all these CMOs who wanted to create that leadership on the platform, and we would coach them to do so. And 2 of them became the top 100 CMOs of the year after going through a program. So it has to matter. It has to be, can that CMO be promoted from this activation that you're doing? Or think about what is in it for them. Number 4, when I have a portfolio, after I realize that all customers are not equal, I have to meet the people. And one of my mentors always told me, listen, good to meet the people. And for me, I want to meet the people because I want to understand if first they have the chops to grow. And that means that do they have the drive to be able to carry through the vision or the goals of the CEO? If yes, like, how much drive do they have? And then I can organize and segment my portfolio related to that. If no, then potentially I might need to treat them differently and adjust my treatment of their portfolio to their appetite to grow. Because I've had customers who told me, hey, slow down, slow down. And those customers, unless they're the biggest customer in your portfolio, which is going to bring you further down the line, if they're not, they don't have the appetite to grow, it's very hard to push a rock up a hill. So that's the 4th one. And the 5th one is a return on energy. For me, that's very important because selling is a lot of energy, right? I mean, positive energy initially, but maybe you have to travel. Maybe you have to work on the proposal. Maybe you have to build campaigns depending on what types of sales. And what is going to be the return on my energy that I invest with these? And that's why I don't jump in right away. I analyze, do they have the chops to grow? And then do they have the drive to grow? Because they could have the chops, they could make a lot of money, et cetera. But the people who are running the department could be on a slow mode. It's like, no, we already hit the KPIs, we're going to slow down. Then that becomes very hard to find them, to motivate people to grow, versus if I have other players in my portfolio, sometimes that will be smaller. But they're so hungry, then I would triple down on them and put a lot of time and my team's energy on these players. And those are the ones that have really made my career. The hungry ones.
The hungry ones, right? This this is like a sales and partnership masterclass. And I wish people would take your 5 steps and obsess about every single one of them. Because when it comes to trying to understand how you help somebody else, that's one thing. But like you said, there is a science and a process to be able to make it systematized so that you can actually do this time and time again, because otherwise it becomes a bit of a flash in the pan.
Yeah, you have to have a system, otherwise you're not going to make it. Depending on, sometimes you do enterprise sales, which is like, you can have four massive customers and that becomes extremely risky. You can apply these principles, but you can't really ignore none of them, because any one of these customers could really make you like bring your portfolio down. I think finding the appetite to grow, people with the appetite to grow, I still talk to them today. Those are my best customers. Some of them sold their business. They're like rich. I live in Los Angeles and like they have multiple houses. Talking about $10 million houses, sold their business for nine figure. So those people, we were in the trenches together and we still do business together differently. And I think what's beautiful with partnerships is it goes beyond just, I don't think about just hitting my numbers, because it becomes too narrow-minded. I'm in the business of building relationships with people who have a goal, who have families, who have, one of my customers used to literally sleep in his car in the garage of LA Fitness, because he was like, he had a Facebook agency and then he had Google. And then when we met with his team, we're like, wait a minute, we can 5X your Google portion of the business. Just let us in, right? Some also in the partnership is you want to be, I love Kim Scott, who talks about radical candor.
Yeah.
But radical candor is when you care deeply, then you can challenge directly. But you have to build a relationship where you care and they know that you care and that they care about you. And then you can open up and say, listen, we can 5X your business, but you're going to have to like loosen up some of the reins, and my team and I are going to go in and we will deliver. And we delivered.
Isn't it funny? It is such a low bar when you think about what sales leaders typically do. Right. And you just explained here what you can do in a system which can make a sales and revenue and a growth leader stand out. And I think what people miss is that it's actually a lot of fun to build that kind of momentum, because positive energy drives positive energy. You know, you as you were thinking about your careers through these really big brands, I know didn't just stick with the sales side of things, the business development, the partnership side. At Google, you started the coffee club and you were very interested in how diversity of leadership, diversity of thought drives a very different outcome for really large companies. Can you say a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I think that's very important. And thank you for bringing it up. The coffee club was my women leadership development program that I developed back in 2015. So it's going to be 10 years at Google. And where it's coming from, it's our VP of sales, Alan Tiger Sands, stood up in an all hands and he raised a question. He said, why are women dropping off at two levels at Google? And I was like, I wanna work on that project. Because as an individual contributor, I understood that if you align your problem solving or the projects or the 20% stretch projects that you have with one of the most senior executives' questions or problem to solve or what's top of mind, then your career is going to be able to accelerate. So at the time, what I did is that I created a pilot, which was the coffee club, the first pilot, with maybe 50 to 100 women. And we created this methodology that now I'm about to launch, which is, what if we gave you an aggressive goal every 90 days that would help you transform how you saw yourself, but transform that area of your life that's really stuck. And for women, we looked at different areas and they would choose a goal and then they would be coached by a senior leader. And after 90 days, they had to report back. And some of the stories, just to this day, people are still emailing me about stories. So there's a woman, Jenna, in Google Cloud. I pinged her and I said, hey, I saw that you posted about the coffee club. I was on LinkedIn and I pinged, and she said, I'm so happy, thankful that you reached out. This is such an amazing program. I became a head of enterprise sales at Google Cloud because of the coffee club. And I was like, this is 2025, right? So for me, the test of, it's the test of, is it a good program? Was it the right thing to do? I think the testament of it is like 3.5 years after I've left the company, the program is still running. Mm-hmm. It's running across 5 continents. So we have it in Asia, India, Australia, Melbourne and Sydney. We have it in Canada, the US. So all over the world. And we had, at the time when I left, there were 20 chapters, but they were going across, not just sales. They were like, of course it went to Google Cloud, but it went to Google Search. It went to mm-hmm. YouTube. It went to Google Play. So all those very senior VPs love the program and they would just take a copy of it and then launch it into their organization.
Yeah.
Because the question my VP had, Alan, was like, why are the women dropping off? I want to have more women leaders at the top. And the program answered, solved some of the gaps. So we saw women being promoted, going for stretch projects, taking leadership roles, gaining the confidence to be able to like really catapult themselves in the world. And that gives me chills today because I realize that it's my life purpose.
It's extraordinary. So I want to double click into that because I know this is what your next play is looking to shape up. And there will be many male and female leaders who have been thinking about this a lot over the last sort of 10 years. I think there have been people who have attempted to try and build programs like what you've described. Mm-hmm. But can we just dive a little bit further into why you think this program worked? Because my sense is that there is an accessibility part to this. There's a casual but very outcome-driven aspect to this as well. Because if I'm outside of technology, if I'm outside of a culture which really wants that, or I'm in a culture that is asking for it but doesn't know where to start, mm-hmm. and they called you, what could they expect to get from that? Because I can only see extraordinary benefit from that being introduced into their organizations.
So in terms of benefits, I mean, we have all the statistics around performance, but I think what is more important is not everybody has grown up to believe in themselves. That's number one. Not everybody has grown up to dream big. And not everybody, if asked to be stretched on your own, are you going to be able to do that? Are you going to be able to take the leap? Sometimes you need to have a coach. And sometimes you need to have access to someone who's going to help you believe in yourself. Right. And that's the difference. That's what I realized. Because for me, it was like, my mom always dream big. She was 18 years old in Haiti. And one day she took a one-way ticket, went to Montreal, didn't tell her parents. She didn't tell anyone. Mm-mm. She didn't. So my DNA, I'm coming from a woman who's fearless. And then I built a technology to figure out how can we help more people become fearless, chase their dreams while having the comfort of having a coach who's going to care, but also who's going to challenge you directly, but also remove some of the roadblocks. Cause we all have, I call it the angry little gremlin. So we have a voice in our head who tells you're not capable of doing it. You're not good enough. You're not smart enough, whatever it is that somebody said at some point. And the power of this program is that whatever limiting beliefs, you've got 90 days. You've got 90 days and you have a cohort of peers. And what I love about the peers is that I did the program on myself and I had my peer. We were the same levels at the time. And my goal was I had to have 7 lunch with senior people at the time. And I was an individual contributor. I was not a people manager. And listen, you work at Google, like there are people, like people are extremely smart. It's an engineering driven company. And I was like, I'm going to have lunch with the VP. What am I going to talk about? I'm going to have like lunch with this managing director. And then I stretch myself just to take the action. So all the baby steps. I'm like, okay, I'm going to reach out to, it was Celine Song, who's now the president of that big organization I was part of at Google. And I said, I'm going to request to have lunch with her. And I'm going to talk to her about the coffee club. I just had to figure out what I'm going to talk to her about. Most of the lunch, it was very 25 minutes, time to grab the food and stuff. We talked maybe for 10, 12 minutes and she had to eat. So I told her about it and she said, how can I help? And I said, would you be the sponsor? And she said, yes. And it was done. She found the founding. And then once you have this breakthrough that you just have to take the action, later on, she put me on up. She became a sponsor. I mean, she never told me, I'm guessing, if she ever sees the video. But after that, when she had a big director role in France, she won in Dublin, actually director of France for agencies in Dublin. She reached out and said, would you be interested in this? And I so wanted to go to Europe. I didn't do it. Finally, I jumped to LinkedIn, but it kept me awake for 2 months. Every night I was like, I would see myself eating a pain au chocolat and drinking my espresso. That didn't happen. But that's the power of sponsorship. That's the power of, if you can just take the step to meet with the people and realize, what do you have to talk about? Well, just prepare 30 minutes of content, give them the time to have a conversation. And, you know, there are people like you. She needs to eat. I need to eat. My goal was not to go and eat. I took a soup or whatnot. But my goal was to have a conversation with her and potentially have an ask if there's an opening. And that changed my life.
So for everyone who's listening and watching this, where you have thought in your business, and of course this goes between personal life and professional life, but if you thought that there was the opportunity to build something great, and using the story you've just shared, making that person successful in a way that was easy for them to say yes, the only thing that would have stopped you from making that step was you saying, I'm not sure they want to hear what I've got to say. Yet you said, no, I'm going to find a way to them. 25 minutes, life changed, mm-hmm. essentially. And 10 years on, you've got the story and the results and the numbers to tell the story. So for people who are wondering, if you're on a jog right now, if you're on your commute right now and you've just heard this story, it is actually not as hard as you think. But let me just play back what I think I heard you say. Mm-hmm. Have 30 minutes of content. Have something to say. Mm-hmm. Have an ask if the ask, if the chance to make the ask comes up. Make it worth their while. Don't waste their time. And go in with a mindset that this could help many other people and they can be part of the solution to the help that could provide that assistance. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. And the only thing I would add is, here it was not an ask of, oh, I want to be promoted. The ask was, you want to layer your ask or ambition or conversation about something that matters, that's going to matter to the leader. That's part of the big problems that they want to solve. Mm-hmm. The big problem to solve at the time was, how do we increase the number of women leaders in this company, yep. which many companies are trying to do, but they don't know how. And some of it is going to be like, this is a mentorship, but indirectly a sponsorship program. But some of it was, this program helped and there were other initiatives. But if you ladder your conversation to a topic that's big enough, interesting enough, and that ladders to some of their business objectives, they're going to care. And she volunteered and we were funded for like years and years and years and years. Like, if I had to do it again, I would have way more ask. I would be even more prepared. But I was a very junior, little scared individual contributor at the time. And but I'm very happy because it's still going strong right now.
So for someone who just heard this and they've gone, I love this idea. If you were sitting in front of somebody who wanted to take your blueprint into their organization, what's the mental model that you would encourage them to have if they are your, you know, 15-year-old ago individual contributor, a little bit frightened, not quite sure where to start? What would you be saying to them if you were sitting across the table from them right now?
I would say, first, like, I like to sit down and write my thoughts. And how I write my thoughts is, what is the problem I'm trying to solve? Mm. So what is the problem to solve? And then, why does it matter? Why do we care? It's kind of what, so what, now what? Mm. So really figuring out, what is the problem to solve? What do we care? Who will care about this problem? And then brainstorm ideas of, what are the different ways to solve that problem? And a lot of different ideas. And then after that, we would select what are the top three potentially. And then in the end, if that program was successful, what would we see differently in what time frame? So I would organize it very quick, because sometimes you have a lot of ideas in your head, mm-hmm. and you just have to jolt them down on paper. and whiteboard them and then organize a project brief. And then after, when you've written all that you think that should belong there in a succinct way, figure out, is this something that you still want to do? Did you come up with a lot of different ideas? And what are the best ideas? And what's interesting, Phil, that you could do is that once you have a clean document, you can organize, go have a lunch with a senior person and say, listen, I thought about this. What are your thoughts? Because a senior person is going to tell you from these 10 ideas or 10 ways to solve, I think the number 7 is the best. And the beauty, I think, in getting mentored, sponsored, or having a project is to source ideas from different people to get their perspective, because you don't have to have all the answers. A senior person will have so much fun problem solving with you, because that's what they like to do. They don't want to sit there and listen to your presentation. No. Involve them in the problem solving. Involve them in the problem. The fact that you did some pre-work is already great. You're not coming just with a problem. You're coming with potential solutions. And then you just be humble and say, what are your thoughts? Like, do you have any other ways that you think that I could solve this problem? Do you have another problem that's more important that you think I should work on? And they're going to tell you. They're going to tell you, like, sometimes, like, this is not that important, but this is important. So I would have one-on-ones with very senior leaders at companies and say, do you think this problem is worth solving for? It's like, no, the real problem is this. If you could solve this, it's going to change everything. And then if you can solve this, it's going to change your career.
This is very powerful. And of course, you haven't just done this at Google and the Coffee Club and at LinkedIn. You also have a podcast, which I understand is in the Apple's top 200 business podcasts, right, around the world. Now, there's a lot of podcasts in the world. Yours is called Driving Impact. And you've taken this philosophy and this way of building trust and partnership into a podcast situation.
Yeah.
What are some of the conversations that really stuck with you about that? Because every time I show up to a conversation like this, what people don't realize is that I get so much value from having one-on-one time. Mm-hmm. And it's such a privilege to be able to share that with everybody else so that they can learn and experience what I've been able to experience.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, tell me more about the conversations that have really landed for you in those sort of unexpected moments.
And what I like about podcasting is you come with your questions and you never know what people are going to say.
You're right.
And having my podcast is very broad. It's Driving Impact, the top 5% method. And it's focused on the 7 elements for you to become a top achiever. Some of it is mindset, which is extremely important. Some of it is health. Some of it is business acumen, career navigation. It's really about career, but I do think that success is not a monolith. I believe it's looking at different elements of your life and calibrating them accordingly such that you can holistically be successful. So the guests that I interview are very diverse in terms of they come from different fields, because if you're talking about finance versus you're talking about health, those are totally different topic. So there's 2 conversations that were extremely surprising. One was with a soul coach and author named Ra Goddess. She lives in LA. She's amazing. She has a book that's called The Calling. She has another book that just was released that's called Intentional Ambition. And the episode is titled The Universe Whispers Before It Shouts. And what this episode talks about is how the big awakening she's been through, having this transformative moment when she was walking in Brooklyn and somebody shot her at gunpoint and the ball didn't go through her body. Nobody knows where the ball went, right? The bullet. And what I realize is that the universe whispers before it shouts, is that the universe is going to do some gentle taps on her shoulder and we're not always listening. We're going to see signs, but we're not attuned to our intuition. So the universe is going to whisper and then it's going to shout. And for her, the shouting was this big moment where she was shot at gunpoint and she realized this was not the relationship she was meant to be in. This was not the career she was meant to be in. This was not so. And it redirected her career towards being a soul coach, focusing on purpose. And the big takeaway for me is that success, true success, is more balanced and it's more spiritual. And hear me out. What I mean by that is...
I'm with you. Keep going. I'm with you.
It's if there's too much imbalance, it's not a real success. Mm-hmm. If you're not connected to your intuition, it's not a real success. If you're not healthy, it's not a real success. So, and that's where my podcast, we're going deep. I've interviewed multiple people. And another guest was Afdal Aziz, who survived the tsunami in Indonesia. And he was in advertising, working with the biggest brands, Dove. And then he was like, I got to launch my own firm. He launched digital marketing, but purpose-driven digital marketing firm focused mm-hmm. on purpose. So there's some traumatic events that are going to happen in your life to redirect your path. And that's why I say that my biggest awakening was that success is also spiritual, is that you have to be connected to spirituality, whatever it means for you. It could be a force, it could be religion, it could be a grounding force that acts as your compass and helps you stay grounded, like further than all the material aspects of success, which is just one element.
Mm. Can we talk about what is going to come next for you? Now, we're recording this on the 29th of May, 2025. You have been preparing to launch and scale your program to help organizations build out the ability for them to help women and other people, you know, create really positive growth and cultural change. What can people expect around that? And I'm leading a question into how then we think about long-term partnerships here, because you've been part of many of them. You're an expert in this field as well. Let's start with what people can expect in that, because I imagine the ability to tap into that spiritual nature of somebody to help them recognize that to be successful, there are these other elements that we often compartmentalize and put to one side. Don't think they're mm-hmm. important in the moment, but they ultimately end up being very important. What can people expect through the program that you're about to launch, and how do we get the word out about it? Because I have a strong feeling it's going to be very, very impactful.
I'm extremely, extremely excited. It's I'm bringing my baby outside of the confines of one company and outside of Google. So it's exciting. What people can expect is the goal is to help you achieve the life of your dreams, which is very, very broad, but through the lens of your career. And the program is called the Top 5% Method. And it's a career accelerator for ambitious professionals. So I'm going to announce it tomorrow on my profile. People can sign up and apply. It's going to be an exclusive program where I'm going to review every single application, because it's going to be cohort based. And I want to make sure that people are like attract likes, right? Mm-hmm. We want to fly with the eagles. We're going to be an eagle. It'll be a baby eagle, become a bigger eagle. And you can fly from LA to Australia. I think the goal is to help people really get to live the life of their dreams in a way that's holistic and balanced. So I'm going to talk about the seven components that you see in the podcast. So we talk about health, we talk about spirituality, we talk about career, we talk about finance, because you can make a lot of money, but if you're not able to have this money compound, there's no financial freedom. Mm. We're going to talk about relationships as well with self and others, and really the key elements that are going to help people thrive: business acumen. How are you going to help partners if you don't have the core business acumen? So there's certain tenets that you have to reach and develop such that you can be holistically successful.
Right.
And I mean, some of the outcomes have been amazing. There's Ivana Tai, who lives in Toronto now. She was early participant in the coffee club. She found the courage. At the time she was junior, she found the courage to reach out to the CEO and founder of MM Lafleur, this retail company in the US for women. And that CEO became her mentor for multiple sessions. She also found the courage to change groups while she was working at Google. And now she's the CEO or founder of a company that's called Playfield. So which is like, it takes a lot of courage, but the program helps you become fearless and gain the confidence and the methodology to be able to do it time and time again. And that's the goal in any area of your life, but we're going to focus on the career.
You know, and I find it interesting because every time that I connect with a new leader, even when I was quite junior, when I left the military and I started to understand what it was like, how business works, how relationships work, why that's really important, I found, I think, 8 times out of 10 that the person I was speaking to by default was willing to help and wanted to be generous in return. It's just that you have to knock on the door and make the ask. Otherwise, it's not going to happen. And I find it interesting that people will default to a mindset of, I don't think they want to hear what I have to say. And I know I've said this once before in this episode, but I really want people to look at your program and in particular, start to develop the muscle of a prepared ask so that you can build trust through the process. And it might mean that there's not going to be value you can create for them or for you in the first instance, but we're playing a long game here. And part of the brilliance of creating value over your lifetime is being able to do this time and time again with people that really see value in what you offer. So I don't think that people should be focused exclusively on, I make the ask, I get value and I move on. That's actually really bad sales. That's not what you want. You want something a lot deeper than that.
Yeah, you want to go deeper because I believe in the power of relationships in a way that the relationship that transcend time and boundaries of a company. For me, the real success is, am I still friends with some of the people I did business with? And I do, but only the ones that really matter. I mean, of course, I would like to appeal to everyone, but you have to find your people. And I've been reading this book that talks about this life coach, and the average life coach makes $35 an hour. This life coach makes $80,000 per client, and he has 8 clients. But he said no to most of the clients because he said, my niche, he went into that blue ocean where it's like the billionaires that need a coach or the multi-millionaires who want to pay $80,000 because they have big life decisions they're going to make and they need to have an advisor on tap, like somebody they can call at any time. But you have to find your people. So you have to find your people. It's like me, my story with the coffee club. I think one of my first lunches was with Celine, and now she runs, she's the leader, the president of the whole organization. I found, and I cared about women leadership, and I would have a lunch with other people who would not have cared about women leadership and maybe would not have gone anywhere. But I found my person, I found my people that after time would eventually help because we had similar goals.
Yeah.
Helped catapult my career, help elevate all the things that I was doing. So I think that's important for people to know. So in partnership, yes, you have a job. Yes, you have to go the whole portfolio. But through the work that you do, your job is an opportunity to develop the skill set and to build those relationships that transcend time and the people that maybe you're going to build something with. And I think that's what is more interesting to me is the people that I want to stay connected with. And right now that one of them, we were in Portugal together. I was giving a conference, he was traveling, and then we brainstormed. And it's beautiful. We see each other at the gym. So I think those people, those relationships that transcend over time, for me, that's more important. And some of them, I invite them on the podcast as well.
It's super important. And it's part of the joy in life, right? To have those kind of relationships, because often when people are looking for the next partnership opportunity to grow their business, if you look carefully about how the best partnerships work out, it's often that the partnerships that start in someone's new company are as a consequence of having worked with someone before. Mm-hmm. And people will often see a press release for a new partnership and just go, how did that person become the CEO? And within 3 months, or 5 months, there was a new announcement for a really major strategic partnership. Well, no surprises. They've worked with them once or twice before and it worked out really, really well. They're a trusted pair of hands and they know how to work together. And so this should be something that if you're trying to build out new partnerships for your organization, not everyone you worked with before is going to be in the right time and place to help you advance what you need to advance. But there's a good chance there's one or two that there can be.
And what I would say is, my last 15 years of my career were all referrals. So my job as a managing director at LinkedIn was from a friend at Google. When she left for LinkedIn, she emailed everyone. I replied and I said, thank you so much. I just thanked her. I said, thank you for being an amazing mentor and being so generous with your time. And she was also part of the coffee club board. And as soon as she got into LinkedIn, there was a recruiter, and who was top of mind was somebody who was gracious, me. I was gracious, but I had no hidden agenda. I just wanted to thank her because I really appreciated the contribution she had. And she gave me some top feedback as well through the years. Yeah. And then I was the first one she referred, and then I was hired, and she was like, whoa. So, and then my job at Google was a referral from two people. One was the guy who said you should always be in sales, who's also one of my friends, and then one of my former bosses. So it's the world, like, you leave an imprint on people. So you want to be known as a professional in sales or any type of career you're on, where you're reliable, but you're also truthful, and you want to be a good player. And I like one of my former managers said, it's beautiful to see leaders when they leave an organization, they don't leave a bloodbath behind them. So you don't want to be that person that has left a bloodbath.
That's it. Speaking of which, tell me about when you're about to embark upon a new partnership. What are the signals you're looking for that tell you that there could be great potential in this partnership versus this might be more short term than what I'd hoped for?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. I think the signals is, I think we talked a little bit about it in terms of when I get a new partnership or a new book of business, and I've led like 200 people plus in my sales career, I look at not all customers are going to be made equal. So really understanding who am I facing, understanding their business model. Some companies, they're not scalable. Does my product align or contribute more than 10% to their bottom line? Can I make the CMO famous? Then I have to meet the people and understand, do they have the appetite to grow? And are we going to be able to work together? Will I find some champions in that organization? And who are the detractors or people with a hidden agenda? And then I look at the potential return on energy. If I invest time with this partner, what will be the return? And my team and I would go on a field trip and we'd meet the people, probably like have a presentation, lunch, dinner, and then we debrief. What do you think? And then we score. And then we would decide, are we going to invest time? Because sometimes I had portfolios that were mid-market, which means we had hundreds and hundreds of customers. So we just had to be very, very, very strategic about our time.
I love how you've circled back to that model. And I'm very interested for people to be able to adapt that model and take it with them. There'll be some sales leaders listening to this that go, yes, I think we do that, or at least we aspire to do that. But I'm sure that there is tightening of that model that can go on. Particularly, like you say, when the opportunity in a mid-market circumstance is that there is just too many people to get to make this work. And you've got to pick the people that you're really going to make successful through your program. I'm going to flip this to you. I know we didn't talk about this, but I'm going to flip this to you. Do you have any questions for me about this area? Because I would love to riff on this for a minute. We can cut this as well, by the way. But if you have any questions for me, let me know, because I'm very keen to learn from you as well.
No, I think I'm super curious about your Partnership Academy and understanding what are the key principles of partnership that you teach to your small inner circle.
Yeah, it's a good question. I think I was trying to work out what I had done over the last sort of 20 something years that resulted in the partnerships that we pulled off. And these partnerships were in biotech and in healthcare largely, and a bit in e-commerce, but they were all about this idea of trying to, as a very small company, play with big players because they had access to resources and technologies that we desperately needed, but we couldn't afford. And the question was, how do we make it worth their while to pay attention to this very small, a very small Australian startup that was really punching above its weight? And so
I like it's the David against Goliath. Ooh, I like it.
All the time. Like in startup, it's always that way. And it was it ended up being five principles that I ended up sort of tying into this word called ideal. And I would teach my teams, if somebody came to us, if a company came to us and said, we'd like to partner with you, the question was always, is this going to be an ideal partnership for us? And is it going to be an ideal partnership for them? That's the question they should be asking themselves, because if they're not asking that question, the issue is going to be that they're going to fill a book of potential partnerships and 1% is going to be successful. And I didn't want to be part of the 99% that wasn't. So the ideal framework stands for five different elements. The first one is I, and stands for intent. And the question is, do we have shared intent? And the intent really is, it has to be written down in a, and I teach a 5-page slide presentation that basically helps the two parties, before they go anywhere near a contract, create and answer the question, why does this partnership make sense?
And it involves, I remember you shared it with me. I love the bubbles. Right. Yeah,
exactly.
I love that. So, it's alignment.
Simple Venn diagram. Why does it make sense? What are the principles that we're going to work with? What are the high-level milestones we're going to achieve? And why? How are we going to make that other party, in the first instance, wildly successful? Mm-hmm. And so that's where we mesh a lot on this philosophy. The intention is very important, and it has to be written down. It can't be, I hope you understand what we're talking about, or a whole bunch of people nodding in the meeting. It is on paper. And when it's on paper, it becomes an internal sales document, right? You can use that to shortcut the time it takes for senior executives to get across the line on what this whole thing is all about. So that's the intention. Second letter in ideal is D, and that stands for dual benefit. And that means that both parties must have at least two benefits that they can derive from that partnership. Mm-hmm. And the reason we go to four benefits in total is that if you have one metric you're trying to hit and a business condition or a priority shifts or changes and that no longer becomes the main thing to aim for, then the partnership becomes a bit rudderless, right? It doesn't have a basis to try and achieve other things. So in most cases, it will be, you know, we want to make money. Great partnerships are about commercial sustainability. So make it about the money. And that can be uncomfortable for a lot of people, but make it about how, you know, you can either attract more customers or retain the ones you've got. But just start with that. If you end up with brand halo effects or distribution benefits or supply chain security or anything else that comes with it, that's great. But try and make it about how you make the other customer or the other partner sustainable.
Which is similar to the bottom line, make it matter.
Make it matter.
My principle around that, you have like, because it's a stretch, right? So it's good when you're a big player that, am I going to be able to impact 10% of their bottom line or 30% of their bottom line?
Yeah, I love that. I love that.
Can you, but imagine like we're podcast hosts and like, yeah, I'm going to approach this company. How am I going to impact 10% of the bottom line? Well, if I get to the Joe Rogan's.
Yeah, that's right. That's how we'll do it, right? That's how we'll do it. Super
you're
important.
You're going to become the president of the country.
It's all possible. Like, it's all possible. This is the deal. And so then you go to E. So third letter is E. And that is about, it's the word era. So, you know, when you hear somebody say, it's an end of an era, mm-hmm. right? Often when somebody says that, it's about a romantic, positive experience. And people are somewhat sad that it's going to come to an end. So we use that as the formulation around how long the partnership should last for. And for the record, partnerships cannot be 12-month recurring contracts, right? They've got to be, at a starting point, at least 3 years. 2 years to get the partnership started, and then 1 year to renegotiate if things are working well. Mm-hmm. But it's about giving it some time for breathing space. And so instead of saying what's the duration or the tenure of a partnership, we use the term era, because we want to be able to backcast from a point and say, this has been really, really fantastic. So
I like this a lot. Like, for me, the end of an era doesn't think, I don't think about relationship. I think about like, I don't know, like the torrents, like Napster. The last torrent, like that was the end of an era, or MySpace, Tom from MySpace, that was the end of an era as well. So that's
exactly
I like your framework a lot. I think it's there's a lot of similarities.
There is massive crossover here, and this is why I really enjoy spending time with you. Now, A is the fourth letter, and that stands for allies. And allies means that you should have, or you should fight to understand who are the five other people in that business you want to partner with, who can become your internal champions, who can help frame the proposition and give you feedback. And most importantly, that they can be there if your key person happens to leave the organization or gets redeployed somewhere else. It's about having a safety net so that when people's priorities shift, you've still got people you can go to. And most importantly, they can be the people that give you a quick call or send you a text and say, listen, there's a change coming. I can't tell you what it is, but you just need to be prepared that this could impact your partnership. Super important.
Buckle up, buttercup.
Buckle up. Or actually, listen, we've got something else we'd like to work with you on. I just want to give you a quick call to work out how we can extend or make the partnership deeper. So you'll rarely ever have or know those five people when the partnership starts. But as you go through the process to establish intent, it is your mission to find those people, to bring them in. And they could be the person that your key person works for. They could be colleagues. My favorite is to have people at the front line. And so one of the lessons I took from being a serviceman was, you know, the work is done at the front line. The culture that is set to achieve things is done at the front line. So whenever I walk into a new partner organization, I try to hurry as quickly as I can, particularly in healthcare, to go and speak to the nurses, to speak to the janitors, to speak to the people who are seeing things at the front line so I can understand what's going on. Because ultimately, after you sign the deal, the people who are carrying out that partnership are the nurses, are the janitors, are the people that don't get paid very much and often get no context about what's going on. So that's on the ally side. And the last one is L, and that stands for landing the first win. I said before that an era for a partnership should be, you know, 3 years, and people go, well, does that mean that, you know, you don't need to get results? And that is absolutely not the case. The case is that within 6 months of a big strategic partnership, there has to be a win that allows both organizations to realize this was worth it. And the number of times that partnerships go off into the wilderness and die is when there is not somebody who has said before the deal was signed, this is what we are mission driven to achieve in the first 6 months to prove to everybody this was worthwhile. And that's what the ideal framework is. And so when I'm on stage sharing this with an organization, the biggest point of gratitude is I walk back into that organization 6 months' time, and this happened 3 weeks ago. I'm walking down the corridor with my client, and I hear somebody say in passing, they don't even know who I am, they say in passing, I just wonder if that's ideal. And you know that word stuck in their head, and it was, oh, now that's an impact. So the consequence of a framework that you can put into a way that anybody can understand and put into their life, even if they don't get all the words right, and even if they don't get the letters right, but the intention stays in the back of their mind, that's a massive win. And so we teach that in the Partnership Lab. And it's important because, you know, life is just too short for really bad partnerships. So why not just have good ones?
Yeah, life is too short for a bad partnership. I think that's so, so true. And I think when partnerships turn sour, I think you have to find a way to get them back on track.
Right.
I think you can have so much fun with the right partners, even giving like candid feedback or getting on the road together. I have so much fun with my partners. I think I posted about it online when I shared I was in a new role, and it was for agencies. And one of my, like, I had, was working with that agency that had five mics. And one of the mics, I was like, oh, hi, my name is Kat. I'm so excited to work with you. And he took my hand and he looked at me in the eye and said, I'm excited too, but only if it's going to be fun. And some people would have freaked out. And I was like, okay, girl, you're going to have to crank up the fun factor. So I always came with like games, balloons, champagne, whichever. I try to make it, you have to make it fun. It's like, we're going to talk about performance, we're going to talk about all these things, but like, how can we have more fun? And I think that's where, because people remember that the people were fun, and people give more business to people who are more fun. So I think it's important to understand the DNA of the partner, what they care about, understand how they like to have fun. Because listen, one of my, at LinkedIn, I went to, with one of the SVPs, I went to see Nicki Minaj show in LA at SoFi. I never saw Nicki Minaj. We had a suite, and I asked her, I said, would you want to go? And she's like, yes. So it's, you have to have fun. You have to take these moments and marry work with fun and build memories with
that's it.
Partners. Because they're people, they're human beings. It's not just a number on a spreadsheet. It's like we should be having fun. We should have those. And I'm very like unfiltered and I like to have fun. So when my real partners, we talk about the real stuff.
I love it. I love it. Kath, you've been so generous to come and join me today. I have a rapid fire at the end of every episode that I give to
fire
people.
Fire away.
I'm very keen to hear your thoughts on this. So let's dive in to the rapid fire here. So here's question one. Complete this sentence. Partnership is?
Partnership is a growth accelerator. I think that if you drive a lot of value, you can help people totally transform their life. And an example for me is I helped 3 CEOs sell their business for 9 figures. So yes, partnerships is a growth accelerator.
It is no, that is no doubt about that. All right. Question two, what content are you loving at the moment? And it can be anything.
I'm in love with this book. It's called Oversubscribed. And no, I haven't been paying to promote it. It's just so, so good.
It is a great book.
Yeah, it
is a great book.
I'm loving it right now.
All right. What is the worst piece of advice you've received and why?
It was from one of my managers who said, I'd rather have a sales leader who was very toxic, gossiping at the coffee machine and whatnot, but was very good at hitting the numbers. And my manager said, I'd rather have a toxic sales leader who can hit the number than a nice person who can't hit. I mean, both of them are problematic, but I'm like, no, toxicity is not allowed here. There's longer consequences. That was the worst piece of advice I've ever heard.
Yeah, I think that's close to the worst piece of advice I've heard as well. Okay, so question four, when you see potential for a new partnership, what's the first thing you do to turn that potential into action?
I do my homework. I'm going to research their business. I'm going to listen to the podcast they've been on. I'm going to understand their philosophy, their brand values. And then I'm going to reach out to see if there's alignment. But then after I'm going to reach out and I'm going to want to meet the people.
Love it. And final question, what are you deeply grateful for right now?
It's going to be odd what I'm going to say, but I'm grateful for life storms because it has helped me become a better captain. Now I feel like I know how to navigate very choppy waters, whether it's hard deals, hard life moments, hard situations. I feel like I have the tools to be able to face any challenge even more now.
You are one of this world's incredible humans, and I'm so excited to see where this is all going to go. Kath, where are we going to send people to learn more about this program of yours? You are prolific on LinkedIn. Obviously, your podcast will link to, but where would you like people to go to start learning about you?
Yeah, I think people can sign up to the newsletter. It's at drivingimpact.kit.com. And from that newsletter, you're going to be aware of all the programming. And if you're interested in the Top 5% Method Academy, which is a career accelerator, it's drivingimpact.kit.com/top5. It's a bit long.
We'll have the link in the show notes. All you got to do is click the link. It's totally.
Or just go on my website, kathleen.co. We're still building. Stay tuned.
We're gonna link people straight there. You don't have to worry about remembering anything. Just click the link, get across and sign up because it's going to be completely worthwhile. Kath, thank you for your time. I feel as though this is not the last time we're going to speak. I have a funny feeling about this.
No. We're going to speak more. I sent some people your way.
Before you go, I have a quick question for you. Do you worry that you're wasting time, money, and credibility with the wrong partnerships? It's exhausting to pretend everything's fine while secretly worrying that you've made the wrong call. You see others thriving with the right connections and you're stuck wondering if you're missing out on opportunities that could really elevate your business. Well, the good news is that ends today because you can download my free partner calculator that instantly assesses if a partner is an ideal fit for your business. It'll give you the clarity and the confidence and the edge you've been looking for to secure high-value partnerships that not only finally unlock business growth, but also help you reclaim your time. The link is in the show notes. And I'm really glad you're here. I'm Coach Phil Hayes Sinclair. I'll see you in the next episode.